The Meditations of Marcus Aurelius, translated by Gregory Hayes. Book 4. 1. Our inward power, when it obeys nature, reacts to events by accommodating itself to what it faces, to what is possible. It needs no specific material. It pursues its own aims as circumstances allow. It turns obstacles into fuel, as a fire overwhelms what would have quenched a lamp. What's thrown on top of the conflagration is absorbed, consumed by it, and makes it burn still higher. 2. No random actions, none not based on underlying principles. 3. People try to get away from it all, to the country, to the beach, to the mountains. You always wish that you could too. Which is idiotic. You can get away from it any time you like, by going within. Nowhere you can go is more peaceful, more free of interruptions, than your own soul, especially if you have other things to rely on. An instant's recollection, and there it is, complete tranquility. And by tranquility, I mean a kind of harmony. So keep getting away from it all, like that. Renew yourself, but keep it brief and basic. A quick visit should be enough to ward off all and send you back ready to face what awaits you. What's there to complain about? People's misbehavior? But take into consideration, the rational beings exist for one another. That doing what's right sometimes requires patience. That no one does the wrong thing deliberately. And the number of people who have feuded and envied and hated and fought and died and been buried. And keep your mouth shut. Or are you complaining about the things the world assigns you? But consider the two options, Providence or Adams, and all the arguments for seeing the world as a city. Or is it your body? Keep in mind that when the mind attaches itself and realizes its own nature, it no longer has anything to do with ordinary life. The rough and the smooth, either one. And remember all you've been taught and accepted about pain and pleasure. Or is it your reputation that's bothering you? But look at how soon we're forgotten. The abyss of endless time that swallows it all. The emptiness of all those applauding hands. The people who praise us. How capricious they are. How arbitrary. And the tiny region in which it all takes place. The whole earth, a point in space, and most of it uninhabited. How many people there will be to admire you and who they are. So keep this refuge in mind. The back roads of yourself. Above all, no strain and no stress. Be straightforward. Look at things like a man, like a human being, like a citizen, like a mortal. And among the things you turn to, these two. 1. That things have no hold on the soul. They stand there unmoving outside it. Disturbance comes only from within, from our own perceptions. 2. That everything you see will soon alter and cease to exist. Think of how many changes you've already seen. The world is nothing but change. Our life is only perception. 4. If thought is something we share, then so is reason. What makes us reasoning beings? If so, then the reason that tells us what to do and what not to do is also shared. And if so, we share a common law, and thus are fellow citizens, and fellow citizens of something. And in that case, our state must be the world. What other entity could all of humanity belong to? And from it, from this state that we share, come thought and reason and law. Where else could they come from? The earth that composes me derives from earth. The water from some other element, the air from its own source, the heat and fire from theirs, since nothing comes from nothing or returns to it. So thought must arrive from somewhere else as well. 5. Death. Something like birth. A natural mystery. Elements that split and recombine. Not an embarrassing thing. Not an offense to reason or our nature. 6. That sort of person is bound to do that. You might as well resent a fig tree for secreting juice. Anyway, before very long, you'll both be dead. Dead and soon forgotten. 7. Choose not to be harmed and you won't feel harmed. Don't feel harmed and you haven't been. 8. It can ruin your life only if it ruins your character. Otherwise, it cannot harm you, inside or out. 9. It was for the best, so nature had no choice but to do it. 10. That every event is the right one. Look closely and you'll see. Not just the right one overall, but right. As if someone had weighed it out with scales. Keep looking closely like that, and embody it in your actions. Goodness, what defines a good person? Keep to it in everything you do. 11. Not what your enemy sees and hopes that you will, but what's really there. 12. Two kinds of readiness are constantly needed. 1. To do only what the logos of authority and law directs, with the good of human beings in mind. 2. To reconsider your position when someone can set you straight or convert you to his. But your conversion should always rest on a conviction that it's right, or benefits others, nothing else, not because it's more appealing or more popular. 13. You have a mind?
Yes.
Well, why not use it? Isn't that all you want? For it to do its job? 14. You have functioned as a part of something. You will vanish into what produced you. Or to be restored, rather. To the logos from which all things spring. By being changed. 15. Many lumps of incense on the same altar. One crumbles now, one later. But it makes no difference. 16. Now they see you as a beast, a monkey. But in a week, they'll think you're a god. If you rediscover your beliefs and honor the logos. 17. Not to live as if you've had endless years ahead of you. Death overshadows you. While you're still alive and able, be good. 18. The tranquility that comes when you stop caring what they say, or think, or do. Only what you do. Is this fair? Is this the right thing to do? Not to be distracted by their darkness. To run straight for the finish line, unswerving. 19. People who are excited by posthumous fame forget that the people who remember them will soon die too. And those after them in turn, until their memory passed from one another like a candle flame, gutters and goes out. But suppose that those who remember you were immortal and your memory undying. What good would it do for you? And I don't just mean when you're dead, but in your own lifetime. What use is praise except to make your lifestyle a little more comfortable? You're out of step, neglecting the gifts of nature, the hand on someone's words in the future. 20. Beautiful things of any kind are beautiful in themselves and sufficient to themselves. Praise is extraneous. The object of praise remains what it was, no better and no worse. This applies, I think, even to beautiful things in ordinary life. Physical objects, artworks. Does anything genuinely beautiful need supplementing? No more than justice does, or truth, or kindness, or humility. Are any of those improved by being praised, or damaged by contempt? Is an emerald suddenly flawed if no one admires it, or gold, or ivory, or purple, lyres, knives, flowers, bushes? 21. If our souls survive, how does the air find room for them, all of them, since the beginning of time? How does the earth find room for all the bodies buried in it since the beginning of time? They linger for whatever length of time, and then, through change and decomposition, make room for others. So too with the souls that inhabit the air. They linger a little, and then are changed, diffused and kindled into fire, absorbed into the logos from which all things spring, and so make room for new arrivals. One possible answer. But we shouldn't think only of the mass of buried bodies. There are the ones consumed on a daily basis by us and by other animals. How many are swallowed up like that, entombed in the bodies of those nourished by them? And yet there is room for them all, converted into flesh and blood, transformed to air and fire. How is the truth of this determined? Through analysis, material and cause. 22. Not to be driven this way or that, but always to behave with justice and see things as they are. 23. To the world. Your harmony is mine. Whatever time you choose is the right time, not late, not early. To nature. What the turn of your season brings me falls like ripe fruit. All things are born from you, exist in you, and return to you. The poet says, dear city of Cecrops, can't you bring yourself to say, of Zeus? 24. If you seek tranquility, do less. Or, more accurately, do what's essential, what the logos of a social being requires, and in the requisite way. Which brings a double satisfaction. To do less, better. Because most of what we say and do is not essential. If you can eliminate it, you'll have more time and more tranquility. Ask yourself at every moment, is this necessary? But we need to eliminate unnecessary assumptions as well. To eliminate the unnecessary actions that follow. 25. And then you might see what the life of the good man is like. Someone content with what nature assigns him, and satisfied with being just and kind himself. 26. You've seen that. Now look at this. Don't be disturbed. Uncomplicate yourself. Someone has done wrong to himself. Something happens to you. Good. It was meant for you by nature, woven into the pattern from the beginning. Life is short. That's all there is to say. Get what you can from the present, thoughtfully, justly. Unrestrained moderation. 27. An ordered world or a mishmash, but still an order. Can there be order within you and not in everything else? In things so different, so dispersed, so intertwined. 28. Character, dark, womanish, obstinate, wolf, sheep, child, fool, cheat, buffoon, salesman, tyrant. 29. Alien, noun. One who doesn't know what the world contains or how it operates. Fugitive, noun. One who evades his obligations to others. Blind, adjective. One who keeps the eyes of his mind shut tight. Poor, adjective. Requiring others, not having the necessities of life in one's own possession. Rebel, noun. one who is rebellious, one who withdraws from the logos of nature because he resents its workings. It produced you, now it produces this. Schematic. Noun. One who separates his own soul from others with the logos. They should be one. 30. A philosopher without clothes and one without books. I have nothing to eat, says he, as he stands there half naked. But I subsist on the logos, and with nothing to read, I subsist on it too. 31. Love the discipline you know, and let it support you. Entrust everything willingly to the gods, and then make your way through life. No one's master, and no one's slave. 32. The age of Aspasian, for example. People doing the exact same things. Marrying, raising children, getting sick, dying, waging war, throwing parties, doing business, farming, flattering, boasting, distrusting, plotting, hoping others will die, complaining about their own lives, falling in love, putting away money, seeking high office and power. And that life they led is nowhere to be found. Or the age of Trajan. The exact same things. And that life, too, gone. Survey the records of other eras, and see how many others gave their all, and soon died, and decomposed into the elements that formed them. But most of all, run through the list of those you knew yourself, those who worked in vain, who failed to do what they should have, what they should have remained fixed on and found satisfaction in. A key point to bear in mind. The value of attentiveness varies in proportion to its subject. You're better off not giving the small things more time than they deserve. 33. Words once in common use now sound archaic, and the names of the famous dead as well. Camillus, Caeso, Volsus, Dentatus, Scipio, and Cato, Augustus, Hadrian, Antoninus, and everything fades so quickly, turns into legend, and soon oblivion covers it. And those are the ones who shone, the rest unknown, unmasked for, a minute after death. What is eternal fame? Emptiness. And what should we work for? Only this, proper understanding, unselfish action, truthful speech, a resolve to accept whatever happens as necessary and familiar, flowing like water from the same source and spring. 34. Hand yourself over to Clotho voluntarily, and let her spin you into whatever she pleases. 35. Everything transitory, the knower and the known. 36. Constant awareness that everything is born from change, the knowledge that there is nothing nature loves more than to alter what exists and make new things from it. All that exists is the seed of what will emerge from it. You think the only seeds are the ones that make plants or children? Go deeper. 37. On the verge of dying and still weighed down, still turbulent, still convinced external things can harm you, still rude to other people, still not acknowledging the truth that wisdom is justice. 38. Look into their minds, at what the wise do and what they don't. 39. Nothing that goes on in anyone else's mind can harm you, nor can the shifts and changes in the world around you. Then where is harm to be found? In your capacity to see it. Stop doing that and everything will be fine. Let the part of you that makes that judgment keep quiet, even if the body it's attached to is stabbed or burned, or stinking with pus, or consumed by cancer. Or to put it another way, it needs to realize that what happens to everyone, bad and good alike, is neither good or bad. what happens in every life, lived naturally or not, is neither natural nor unnatural. 40. The world is a living being, one nature, one soul. Keep that in mind, and how everything feeds into that single experience, moves with a single motion, and how everything helps produce everything else, spun and woven together. 41. A little wisp of soul carrying a corpse. Epictetus. 42. There is nothing bad in undergoing change or good in emerging from it. 43. Time is a river, a violent current of events, glimpsed once and already carried past us, and another follows and is gone. 44. Everything that happens is as simple and familiar as the rose in the spring, the fruit in summer, disease, death, blasphemy, conspiracy, everything that makes stupid people happy or angry. 45. What follows coheres with what went before it, not like a random catalog whose order is imposed upon it arbitrarily, but logically connected. And just as what exists is ordered and harmonious, what comes into being betrays an order too. Not a mere sequence, but an astonishing concordance. 46. Remember Heraclitus. When earth dies, it becomes water. Water, air. Air, fire. And back to the beginning. Those who have forgotten where the road leads, they are at odds with what is around them. The all-directing logos. And they find alien what they meet with every day. Our words and actions should not be like those of sleepers, for we act and speak in dreams as well, or of children copying their parents, doing and saying only what we have been told. 47. Suppose that a god announced that you were going to die tomorrow, or the day after. Unless you were a complete coward, you wouldn't kick up a fuss about which day it was. What difference would it make? Now recognize that the difference between years from now and tomorrow is just as small. 48. Don't let yourself forget how many doctors have died after furrowing their brows over how many deathbeds, how many astrologers after pompous forecasts about others' ends, how many philosophers after endless discussions on death and immortality, how many warriors after inflicting thousands of casualties themselves, how many tyrants after abusing the power of life and death atrociously, as if they themselves were immortal. How many whole cities have met their end? Helike, Pompeii, Herculaneum, and countless others. And all the ones you know yourself, one after another. One who laid out another for burial and was buried himself, and then the man who buried him. All in the same short space of time. In short, know this. Human lives are brief and trivial. Yesterday, a blob of semen. Tomorrow, embalming fluid, ash. To pass through this brief life as nature demands, to give up without complaint, like an olive that ripens and falls, praising its mother, thanking the tree it grew on. 49. To be like the rock that waves keep crashing over. It stands unmoved, and the raging of the sea falls still around it. 49a. It's unfortunate that this has happened. No, it's fortunate that this has happened, and I've remained unharmed by it, not shattered by the present or frightened of the future. It could have happened to anyone, but not everyone could have remained unharmed by it. Why treat the one as a misfortune rather than the other as fortunate? Can you really call something a misfortune that doesn't violate human nature? Or do you think something that's not against nature's will can violate it? But you know what its will is. Does what happened keep you from acting with justice, generosity, self-control, sanity, prudence, honesty, humility, straightforwardness, and all the other qualities that allow a person's nature to fulfill itself? So remember this principle when something threatens to cause you pain. The thing itself was no misfortune at all. To endure it and to prevail is great good fortune. 50. A trite but effective tactic against the fear of death. Think of the list of people who had to be pried away from life. What did they gain by dying old? In the end, they all sleep 6 feet under. Cadenissus, Fabius, Julian, Lepidus, and all the rest. They buried their contemporaries and were buried in turn. Our lifetime is so brief, and to live it out in these circumstances, among these people, in this body? Nothing to get excited about. Consider the abyss of time past, the infinite future. 3 days of life for 3 generations, what's the difference? 51. Take the shortest route, the one that nature planned, to speak and act in the healthiest way. Do that, and be free of pain and stress, free of all calculation and pretension.